Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. Tickets are now on sale for the 2023 Savannah Music Festival in Savannah, Georgia, March 23rd through April 8th. Scheduled artists, trumpeter Terrence Blanchard, violinist Regina Carter, and pianist Kenny Barron and bassist Dave Holland. For more information, savannahmusicfestival.org. This evening, Thursday, December 8th, at Elastic in Chicago, Illinois, the improvised music series presents the Christopher Damon Quintet, featuring drummer Scott Clark, 8:30 p.m. CST. And on Saturday, December 10th, the final iteration of Freedom From and Freedom To, 7 p.m. CST. For more information, elasticarts.org. Also tonight, pianist Laszlo Gardoni and his trio perform in celebration of their new Sunnyside record release, Close Connection, at Birdland Theater inside of Birdland Jazz Club in New York City, 8:30 p.m. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. Vibraphonist, marimbist, and composer Patricia Brennan celebrates her new Pyroclastic Records release, More Touch, with an album release concert on Friday, December 9th at the Jazz Gallery in New York City. She'll be joined by bassist Kim Cass, drummer Marcus Gilmore, and percussionist Mauricio Herrera. And on Saturday, December 10th, drummer Dan Weiss. For more information, jazzgallery.org. This Friday and Saturday night, December 9th and 10th, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, pianist Iliani Elias for two sets. And on Sunday, December 11th, vocalist Sheila Jordan, also for two sets. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. On Saturday night, December 10th, the Grinch Suite and the Duke Ellington Nutcracker Suite, performed by the Water Gap Jazz Orchestra at the Cecilia L. Cohen Recital Hall inside the ESU Fine and Performing Arts Building in East Strasburg, Pennsylvania, 6 p.m. There'll also be a matinee presentation on Sunday, December 11th at 3 p.m. in Morristown, New Jersey. For more information, esu.edu/jazz@esu. Also on Saturday, drummer Matt Wilson leads his trio at Chris's Jazz Cafe in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania for two sets. For more information, chrisjazzcafe.com. And the next night, they'll be a part of Jazz Nights in Princeton, New Jersey. For more information, jazznightsprinceton.com. Another one on Saturday night, vocalist Layla Bialy will be by the fireside with the London Symphonia and the H.B. Beale Secondary Singers at the Metropolitan United Church in London, Ontario, 7:30 p.m. For more information, londonsymphonia.ca. Jazz is Sunday at the Falcon in Marlborough, New York, on December 11th at 7 p.m. as part of the Jazz Coalition series, vocalist Faye Victor's Sirens and Silence. For more information, liveatthefalcon.com. And also on Sunday, drummer Dan Weiss performs at The Bop Stop in Cleveland, Ohio. For more information, danweiss.net. And now for new and upcoming releases. Vocalist Angela Tyrone and guitarist Chris Platt's self-release, The Spinner Sessions. Pianist Corey Smith's Smoke Gets in Your Eyes on Pyroclastic. The Winnipeg Jazz Orchestra's self-release, Voices, A Musical Heritage. Pianist Sakoto Fuji's Hayaju, 100 Dreams on Libra. And trumpeter Donald Byrd's Live, Cooking with Blue Note at Montreux on Blue Note. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. My interview is with German multidisciplinary musician, composer, and creative educator Markus Rutter. His release, co-produced with Matthias Dürer, is Mata Atlantica, Ritero y Ritmo, on 7D Media. I want to thank you, Markus, for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
It's a pleasure.
Co-producer Matthias Dürer was inspired to create this work by a trip to Brazil 5 years ago. He sent out invitations to prospective collaborators utilizing the principle of a chain letter, where a person who receives the correspondence and sends it on to others, and it seems like it worked.
Yeah.
How did he win you over to begin work on this project?
Yeah, he mentioned this idea to me a while ago. I don't remember exactly when, maybe 3-4 years ago already. And so before actually this chain letter idea was put into action, we started making a list of people that we thought would be good, that would be approachable, also that would be part of my circle of friends, basically, because it turned out that the communication was like the crucial element in making this music, come together.
The music and the phrasing of the words are so lush, much like the Brazilian rainforest. Mm-hmm. Your choice of poets whose texts are used in the compositions are interesting to me. The American poet Emily Dickinson, the English poet Lord Byron, and the English novelist and poet Rudyard Kipling.
Yes.
Knowing details about their lives, Dickinson was a recluse, Lord Byron was a lech, and Kipling had a number of really horrendous experiences at boarding schools when he was younger. It's amazing that they found comfort and beauty in nature and achieved an awareness and love of it in their works. Mm-hmm. My question to you is, who brought these three to your and Matthias's attention?
Yeah, so Matthias is actually a writer. So he doesn't want people to know that, but he's writing novels, right? and so when he was looking for inspiration or for words to use for this album, he felt it inappropriate to kind of like use his own words. There's one section, one piece where he uses his own words, but he tried to kind of like bring in like different perspectives and different voices, so to speak, just like the voices of the singers that we used. He wanted to use different voices of different poets. And he also found some old Portuguese and Brazilian Portuguese poets whose words he used. And I can't tell you much about why he chose these people, but I think it's pretty much based on the content of the words. So anybody listening to Kipling's words, which is just like a couple sentences in one of the pieces, for example, you know why it was chosen. So I think it's more about the actual lines of text than the poets themselves.
Mm, yes, I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to comment on Brazilian President Bolsonaro's environmental legacy and President-elect Lula da Silva's outlook for the Brazilian rainforest?
Yeah, I'm not very well informed. Let's just hope that things go in a better direction. And I think like part of this initiative of this album, but also of AMAP, the organization that Matias supports, is to not really, to be independent of the political situation and simply start doing something. And that's sort of like the overall, let's say, if I'm political at all as a musician, then that's that. Like I'm an actionist, like I do things, right? On a musical level, on a creative, on an artistic level, rather than asking myself the question about what politicians are doing. It's really my realm of power, and Matias's as well. So.
You know, coincidentally, when I was contacted to interview you, I was reviewing your group Anchor and Burden's 2021 long-form composition, Weigh Anchor.
Mm-hmm.
This recording, along with your solo release, Anchor and Burden, was born during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yes.
Did your work on these projects collide with your work on Mata, Atlântica, Retiro e Ritmo? And if so, would you please describe some of the overflowing energy and ideas from your projects into this present one?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. And yes, you're absolutely right. These projects were carried through at the same time. And everything, all my work of the past 2.5 years is based on like some, let's say, big steps in personal development on my end. And so I already mentioned the communication as the main factor in the creation of art. And really, I made huge steps forward. Anchor and Burden is completely improvised music in the moment. And it's the respect, and more than respect, it's like unconditional love, you could say, between the musicians to create. And this sort of experience, this sort of love also carried over to Mata Atlântica, where, as you said, it's like a chain letter kind of thing. Like nobody really ever heard the whole thing, or, you know, everybody was just responding to small parts of the whole. And so it was crucial that I found a good way to communicate with people, for them to be satisfied to contribute. And in the process of putting together the album, I did not censor anything that people submitted to me, which was in a little bit just like improvising with people in a room where you can't really change what everyone contributes because it happens at the same time, right? So that's really why I would say that my work of the last couple of years has really become something else, because I've sort of started applying the knowledge I have about instant composition, instant as in the moment, also to collaging contributions that happened in different places and different times. And that's what Mata Atlântica represents.
probably what I'd like you to do is talk about more about the music and especially the musicians. I'd just like to open it up in the way that you'd like to respond.
You know, so Mata Atlantica, really this album is musically super interesting because it's very experimental on one hand and really out there, but then it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like people playing in a room. You can sort of put it on in the background when you're having dinner. You could imagine having drinks to it. It's really kind of relaxed and at the same time quite experimental. And it's the individual contributions that I got by musicians like Raphael Preuschel, the bass player, for example, Gary Husband, the keyboard player, Andy Pupato, the percussionist. Everything was sort of like of the highest caliber. So I first of all, I didn't have to censor edit or edit anything. And the way that these parts came together was just such wondrous. And like the way that I then made these compositions, these songs, or Matthias and I made these songs work, was by adding elements. So Matthias wrote vocal melodies and chose the poetry. And I kind of like added, you know, individual notes here and there, some chords here and there, stuff like that. And so it really is like a collective composition. And like I said, like the result is so interesting because it's deep, but you can also experience it as something quite nice and light. And that was, you know, given, you know, in the light of the destruction of the rainforest, it was, you know, it was important to me to do something that has both like an earnest kind of serious approach, but at the same time, I didn't want the result to be very, very heavy. So it's like, you know, like combining these elements of light and shade to make this album was really my main concern. But I used the word concerned, but I was never concerned about the music to come out nice.
Beautifully put. That was wonderful. Yeah. So, Marcus, as we come to the end of this interview, I'd like to give you the last word. And it's about, if you want to expound on what you've just said or tell us about some upcoming projects, some outlooks for us.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've been extremely prolific this year and also very, very inspired, which is wonderful for me. I actually had to start putting out music under synonyms, so under different names, so that there wasn't too much coming out in my name. So there's gonna be a new Anchor and Burden album, actually, that will be on CD for the first time, which will be put out by Moon June Records in January. And that has a funny name. It will be called Cosmonautic Pilgrimage. it's a wonderful album. And then there is this Japanese artist that I started working with called Kid Arrow. And Kid Arrow makes this really amazing electronic music that's sort of based on the sound of the electronic music of the 70s, Klaus Schulze and Tangerine Dream and stuff, and Jean-Michel Jarre, but in a very modern way. And it's like music that is almost, you could say, is almost like this whole idea of artificial intelligence and stuff. And it's really generative music that kind of like is extremely engaging, extremely hypnotic, and very, very beautiful, where, you know, the artist wants to create sort of like almost like a microcosm or like a family of pieces which are all related. So they all come from the same gene pool, you could say, and they have this almost endless amount of musical pieces that he's trying to generate. And then there is like, I'm continuing to produce music. There's going to be hopefully a new Stickman album next year. We have released an album called Tentacles in 2022. And we're going on tour, again 2023, and we'll have some more new music for the fans.
For more information, MarcusRuter.com. And now for music.
Thank you. chegou, sorriu, venceu, depois chorou, então fui eu quem consolou sua tristeza, na certeza que o amor tem dessas fases, mas que é bom para fazer as pazes. Mas depois fui eu quem dele precisou, e ele então me socorreu, e o nosso amor mostrou que veio pra ficar mais uma vez por toda a vida. Bom é mesmo amar em paz, brigas nunca mais. Chegou, sorriu, venceu, depois chorou, então fui eu quem consolou sua tristeza, na certeza que o amor tem dessas fases, mas que é bom para fazer as pazes. Mas depois fui eu quem dele precisou, e ele então me socorreu, e o nosso amor mostrou que veio pra ficar mais uma vez por toda a vida. Bom é mesmo amar em paz, brigas nunca mais.
Three artists with new releases coming out have upcoming performances this weekend in New York. From Brazilian pianist Iliane Elias, from her new Candid Records release, Quietude, that was Brigas Nunca Mas, No More Fighting. She performs at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, tomorrow and Saturday night, December 9th and 10th. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. From his 14th album as a leader that came out on December 2nd, pianist and educator Laszlo Gardoni with the composition Strong Minds from Close Connection on Sunnyside Records. Gardoni with the rest of his trio, bassist Avery Sharp and drummer Yoron Israel, performed this evening at Birdland Theater inside of Birdland Jazz Club in New York City. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. And from vibraphonist, marimbist, and composer Patricia Brennan's pyroclastic release More Touch, that was Square by Magic. She was with bassist Kim Cass, drummer Marcus Gilmore, and percussionist Mauricio Herrera. The group will be at the Jazz Gallery in New York City tomorrow night to celebrate the release of the album. For more information, jazzgallery.org. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com. For more information about the show, jazzfluxus.com. My guest is tenor saxophonist, composer, and educator Dennis Mitcheltree. His Dengor music release, Golden Rule, became available in October. He's with Johannes Wallman on piano, Jesse Crawford on bass, and Bill McClellan on drums. So, Dennis, I want to thank you for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's my pleasure.
In reviewing your discography of six releases, only 1998's Alterberg Jazz release, Transformation, includes compositions by other writers. I find it one of the pinnacles of being a musician, writing your own stuff. Is there a designated time and or place and or headspace that you choose to write music?
Absolutely. Although that space has changed over the years, I've been writing for more than 30 years, like 35 years, or perhaps even longer, but not like intentionally. That just some things came up when I was younger. But, you know, when I was younger, there was a lot of stuff in my head and things would just happen. Like I would hear something, some melody in my head, some harmony, some bass line, and it would be something that I would feel that I would have to explore. And as I was exploring it, I was like, well, why not make a tune out of this? And, you know, they would just happen. It's not like I had to, you know, sit down and go, okay, now I'm going to write a tune. It would actually just pop up and then I'd have to work on it a little bit and it would come around. Although back then when I was younger, it would take a lot longer for it to actually coalesce into a composition. What I found is since I had children, my daughter, my oldest is now 15 years old, is that they take up an inordinate amount of time of my daily life, although it's wonderful. I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. But once I had kids, like a lot of things had to take the back seat to them. And one of the things was regularly composing. So I wasn't quite as prolific once they came around in 2007. But I found that in having children, the music that I was hearing also ended up becoming different. It was, it became more simplistic, more to the point, instead of, you know, sort of having a space where I'd say, okay, now I'm going to compose something. And because I had something on my mind, it was less frequent, but more compelling for me to put down on paper what it was that I was hearing and flesh it out. And the music that I've written since having children is very different. In most cases, it's way less complex. It's more to the point. There's a more of, instead of it being so serious all the time, there's a sense of whimsy to the music now that I write, which I actually really kind of dig, you know, because as a younger person, at least for me, I was far too serious, far too much of the time. And that was reflected in the music that I wrote. And with kids, if you don't lighten it up, man, you're in for a tough time. So you know, I lightened it up and brought out what was there. Now what's happening is I usually don't write a tune unless I've got a recording date that I need to write for. And you know, it comes out really, really quick, like this last CD, Golden Rule. We had a recording session coming up in a month and I was like, all right, I got to come up with six new tunes. And I wrote them within the space of 2 weeks. And so I think what's happening is in my brain, that music that I hear is still there, but I don't really worry about it until it's time to put it down on paper.
In the press release, you took the time to write the meaning behind each tune. You had fun with play on words with Genghis Khan. A combination of the names of the 12th century Mongolian leader Genghis Khan and the philosopher Immanuel Kant. And you honor family and acquaintances. Waltz for Tai, who is your son.
That's correct.
And Vi Dance.
It's actually Via Dance. Her name is Olivia. I always call her Via.
Via, okay. Via Dancer. And I believe she's the same person who you wrote the song Olivia for your 2021 release, Nevermind the Circus?
That's correct, yeah.
Ah, okay. And is it correct to say that this release, much like your politically charged 2006 trio release, Tenor of the Times, is personal?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the things that that I see going on in society that are things we need to pay attention to sometimes come to the front when I'm writing music. And, you know, if I don't give voice to that, then I'm not doing my part in trying to keep this all together.
I'll ask this question by referencing two compositions from Golden Rule. How was it emotionally different writing Gingerfoot compared to Sarah?
They're two completely different tunes. The way that they come up is completely different. And in terms of Sarah, she's my girlfriend. She's very complex. She's smart. She's beautiful. She's deep. And
wait a minute, that's me. Oh, sorry.
Well, perhaps my the name of my next tune will be Cheryl, although I think Ron Carter's, oh no, Tony Williams has already got dibs on that.
That's right.
Yeah. Which is a beautiful tune, by the way. Was that written for you?
I don't think so.
Oh, man.
I can only hope so.
Yeah, let's go with that. I think that sounds good. yeah, but you know, with Sarah, there's a complexity to the person that I'm writing about. So there should be some complexity to the music that I write. Gingerfoot, on the other hand, I mean, that's just a very simple melody that I couldn't get out of my head that I had to write down. It's over, you know, I got the changes from the tune I Got Rhythm, which is a very standard vehicle for jazz musicians to use for writing, you know, set of chord changes that they write their own melody over. And I just thought it was a cute little phrase and we turned it into a tune, you know, and that happens sometimes. And that's, I mean, that's really old school. That's the way it yep. kind of used to be too.
Yeah. About the two musicians who've been with you on all six of your releases as a leader. That's bassist Jess Crawford and drummer Bill McClellan. And on half those releases, pianist Johannes Wallman, all of whose contributions you warmly describe in the liner notes.
Yeah, they are not only my the musicians that I love to play with the most. They are incredible, wonderful human beings. They are my friends. What they bring to this band is something that I can't really describe except to say that we are like brothers in arms. When we hit the road and we play, you know, we've done it for weeks at a time, and we get so tight. It's like we can read each other's minds. It's I can't say enough about all three of these guys. I first knew Jesse Crawford in New York as a bass player. We got together on some session that I believe a guitar player set up, and I was like, wow, this cat can really play this, and he's very cool. And so I asked him to do a couple gigs with me. And what I love about him is not only his wonderful bass playing, is his position on his position in the band, which is he is always solid. He always memorizes the tunes. He's always able to play from the heart because basically he puts so much work into knowing what the material is and taking it, him and the music and his position in the band, incredibly seriously. And there's no way that I could do this without him. You know, he's the rock. I never have to worry about anything that he does. In fact, when we were on the road, we called him the security officer because he would keep us in line if we were starting to get out of hand.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And Bill McClellan, extraordinary drummer, great human being. Him and I, we are definitely brothers as well. And just like most brothers, we get into it from time to time, but it's always really, really fun, even if we drive each other nuts from time to time. But Bill brings the fire. He really does. He's he's not short of opinions, and most of them are really interesting. And I couldn't have this band without him too. I mean, the way that the band works together is we each bring our own personalities to the music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I wrote in the liner notes, you know, we bring our individuality into it. And, but what we do together is something much more than we could do on our own. It's beautiful. But yeah, I also wanted to talk about the pianist, Johannes Wallman. You know, we started playing together about, Bill and Jesse and I started playing together about 30 years ago now. Johannes joined the band about 25 years ago. We used to, Bill and Johannes and I used to do a lot of trio stuff without piano for economics and for the music itself, because there's so much freedom to that. But I really did want to have my music presented with a harmonic background. And I was scheduling a tour right after my first release, Brooklyn, and needed to go out on the road for 2 or 3 weeks. And I called up Jim McNeely, a wonderful pianist, arranger, composer, who I was playing in his band some. And I asked him if he was interested in doing it. He was like, no, I can't go out on the road for 2 or 3 weeks. But there's this young pianist that is at NYU where he taught or teaches. I'm not sure where he is now, where Jim is. But and his name is Johannes Wallman. I would heartily recommend him for the gig. And I was like, well, all right, let's check it out. So I had a gig and he came to the gig and he could play. I was like, all right, you want to do a tour? And he's like, sure. And so that was the beginning of the four of us getting together. And it lasts to this day, whenever we can possibly get together, despite the fact that I'm in L.A. Johannes is now the director of the jazz department at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And Bill and Jesse are still in New York. We still get together and we do gigs.
Yeah. The group has recorded and toured and played live for, what are we talking about, 2 decades?
Oh, even more, like the four of us, 25 years.
25 years. Where do you hear the group playing at its best?
At its best? Well, you know, at this point, if we can get together for 2 nights, that second night is going to be slamming. Back when we were a little bit younger, it might have taken 3 or 4 nights in a row for us to really, really be hitting. But it's really just a matter of getting back together in familiarity. It's like really any relationship, any deep relationship. If you've got people who really understand each other, you know, we're all a little bit guarded personally. And so when we get together with somebody, even though we know we're brothers, it takes a minute for everything to really click. The music is good right off from the very beginning, but after a night or two, it's really happening. So that's really the key. It's playing together over a length of time.
Let me go to the album's liner notes. There is hope. It's in what the philosopher Immanuel Kant called the categorical imperative, also known as the golden rule. Treat others as you wish to be treated. Dennis, If there was anyone or any group that you want to lay this release in their hands and say, you need to listen to this on repeat, who would it be?
Well, there are many, many people who know this rule, who know this piece of advice, who try to follow it as much as they possibly can. But no single person is capable, no single person I know is capable of being like that 100% of the time, including myself. It is something that I try to do every day, in every minute of every day, with every single person that I meet, but I'm not always successful. So frankly, I mean, anybody should listen to that advice and follow through on it. But I do sense, as I'm sure many of your listeners do, that these days in particular, there are a lot of people who've moved on from that way of being, of taking care of treating each other with respect, of being kind, to battling each other. And, you know, that's happened throughout human history, and it happens between nations, it happens between people who actually care about each other. But in the social discourse that we've got going on these days, you know, if you've spent any time on Facebook or Twitter, you see that it's a staple of the way we communicate with each other. Is there's a lot of attacking, there's a lot of belittling, there's a lot of trying to make people look foolish. And so the people who are really engaged in a lot of that stuff, I think they'd be the ones that I'd want to listen to this. They'd be the ones that I'd want to have that idea of treating each other as you wish to be treated, that notion in their minds. And have that in the back of their heads every moment before they hit that send button on social media. We've gotten to a point where the entertainment value of the fight is being put in front of us far more frequently than the commonalities that we all have. If you look at your neighbor who may have very different cultural beliefs, may have different political beliefs, that neighbor wants 99.9% of what you want. There might be a 0.1% difference in a policy, in something. Ask yourself, is that 0.1% difference enough for you to demonize that person, to make that person feel like they're awful for having that idea? I think that people just need to start treating each other with respect and kindness.
For more information, DennisMitchellTree.com. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus, produced for and airing on WGXC 90.7 FM, a listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on WGXC. WGXC.org. For more information about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or jazzfluxus.com. Thank you. We'll be right back.
preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.